Welcome to Menopause in the Kitchen, where we talk all things food and nutrition for women in their midlife years. I'm Rachel Cooper, dietitian and food lover, with a passion for sharing information about nutrition in practical ways so that you can take what you need and implement it into your lifestyle. Join me in my kitchen as I share bite-sized chunks of information to help you nourish your body and thrive in your midlife years and beyond. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Menopause in the Kitchen. Thanks for joining me again. I've got another episode today, which will be about a specific topic, a topic that I have noticed people seem to be Googling and wanting to know about, which is vitamin B12 and menopause. So what I'm going to talk about today is what vitamin B12 is all about, why we need it, why it's important. And I guess looking at the current research in terms of whether it's helpful in any way in terms of, your health during menopause, or whether it can have any impact on our time during perimenopause and menopause. So that's what today's episode is going to be about. So let's just jump in and get into it. So vitamin B12. B12 is obviously one of the B vitamins, and it is an essential nutrient. It is something that our body needs to have to keep it healthy, and it's really important for our nervous system. So B12 is really essential for a healthy nervous system, and it's also important for the formation of red blood cells. So obviously we need red blood cells, and B12 is sort of needed in order to make red blood cells. And it also helps our body make DNA. So it has really, really essential role in terms of keeping our body functioning. Now, B12 can be found naturally in foods, but generally in food it's bound to protein. So it's bound to a protein, and it needs to be released from that protein during our digestive processes in order for it to be absorbed. So this digestion release of the B12 from protein starts in the mouth, and it continues on throughout the digestive tract. There are also some foods, I'll talk about which foods are high in B12 in a moment, but there are some foods that are fortified with B12, and these don't actually need to be released from protein. So they're added in their free form, just like you would if you were taking a supplement, for example. So, but in most foods where it's found naturally, it does need to be sort of digested through the process and released from the protein so our body can absorb it. So let's have a look at which foods are high in B12. And pretty much naturally, it's naturally found in mostly animal products. So red meat, poultry, seafood, eggs, milk and other dairy products are basically where we're going to get B12 from. Now, that can be an issue if you don't eat those foods. Now, if you're vegetarian and you still eat eggs or you still eat dairy, you're pretty much going to be okay. Our requirements for B12 aren't massive. We don't need huge amounts of it. But if you're vegetarian and still eat dairy, you should be fine. I guess the groups of people that may be more at risk are those who are vegan, because they won't eat any of those animal-based products. So as I said, some foods are fortified. And if you are vegan, that is really what you need to focus on. Or you may need to take a supplement, and that's something to discuss with your healthcare providers about whether or not that's needed. But if you are eating enough foods that are fortified with B12, you may actually be okay. So some of the foods that are often fortified are plant-based milk. You need to check to see if it is fortified though. Not all of them are, but a good way if you are vegan to get some B12 in is to get a plant-based milk that has B12 in it. Another is nutritional yeast, which is often used in a lot of vegan foods like as a cheese replacer or to give flavor to foods. And also yeast spreads like Marmite and Vegemite. In fact, I did a little bit of sort of research into this as I was going down the track of finding out information about B12. And now for those of you who are not from Australia, Vegemite is a yeast extract spread. It's very Aussie. Marmite tends to be more UK from what I understand, but it is still available here in Australia. But I would say Vegemite is probably what's sold most. And regular Vegemite doesn't actually have B12. So it has lots of B vitamins, is a very good source of B vitamins, but not B12. But the reduced salt version of Vegemite does. Not quite sure why. That's very interesting. I don't know why they don't put it in the regular one as well. But if you are looking for a source of B12, then that might be, you need to check and make sure you're buying the correct one that actually has B12 in it. And of course, a lot of the vegetarian or plant-based meat alternatives like sausages and burgers and so on can also be fortified with B12. Again, you need to just read the label to have a look and see if they do have it added. So if you're vegan, really important to look for these fortified products. Otherwise, you definitely would be at risk of B12 deficiency. Another little interesting fact is mushrooms do contain some natural B12. So it's probably the only plant-based food that does naturally contain B12. However, the amount is quite small. So even if you're vegan, you're not likely, unless you're eating a lot of mushrooms, you're not likely to meet your B12 requirements with mushrooms. But just as a little bit of interest, they do have some B12 in it, but definitely need to look at other sources as well, because it won't be quite enough. All right, so they're the sorts of foods that are high in B12. Now let's have a talk about how much B12 we need. So for menopausal women, it's not actually different to pre-menopause, post-menopause. Pretty much the B12 requirement doesn't really change. It just sort of changes from childhood, adolescence through to adulthood. But it's 2.4 micrograms per day is how much we need for in the adult years. Now let's have a talk about what happens if we don't get enough B12. So like I said, for most of us, it's probably unlikely that we will be deficient in B12. If you do have some medical conditions, particularly if you have any inflammation or issues with your stomach lining, because that's often where in the stomach where the B12 will separate from the protein. And so you can have a lack of absorption. So you might be eating enough, but not getting enough. So if you have any issues like gastritis, you know, like inflammation of the stomach lining, you may have less B12 absorption. There are also some other causes of lack of absorption of B12 and also some medications that can interfere with that process. So really important that if you're concerned about, you know, whether you're got enough B12 and you're absorbing enough B12, that's something to have a chat about with your doctor. Gastritis is a lot more common in people over the age of 50. So for those of us getting to that age. Those, and often that coincides with roughly about the age that people hit menopause. So it could become an issue for you even if it hasn't been previously. So again, something to talk to your doctor about if you have any of these conditions that may affect your absorption of B12. And then of course the other reason that you may be deficient is just that you're not eating those foods that are high in B12. So B12 deficiency can cause a particular type of anemia, and that is something that your doctor can test for and will be able to determine if it's an anemia resulting from B12 deficiency or from iron deficiency. So that they are separate types of anemia, but they can, the blood tests will be able to tell which one it is. But some of the common symptoms that you may experience if you do have B12 deficiency is fatigue. You may have a swollen or inflamed tongue, palpitations, loss of appetite, headaches, and in more severe cases, there may be neurological issues. So tingling in the arms and legs, there might be a difficulty thinking, memory loss, and also weakness in the muscles. And that's all related to the fact that B12 is very important for our nervous system. So definitely if you're experiencing any of those symptoms, it is something that you need to go and discuss with your doctor and have some tests to find out whether it is a B12 issue. Many of those symptoms are also symptoms of iron deficiency anemia, so that's why, you know, some blood tests would be required just to see what the culprit is. All right, so that's in general what B12 is about and what might happen if we are lacking B12 in the body. Now let's have a look at what the research says about vitamin B12 specifically in menopause or around that menopause age group. So there's not a lot of research, to be honest. It's relatively limited, as with a lot of menopause research. I think it's starting to pick up, but it certainly hasn't been a big research area, but I do think it's improving. So there have been some studies, though, that have looked at the relationship between B12 and things like bone density and also brain function. And we know that these two areas, bone density, are a significant issue when we reach menopause, because when our hormone levels, when estrogen drops, it can affect our bone density and increase our risk of osteoporosis. So there has been some research looking at B12 and whether there is, any link between that and bone health. And basically what they have found is that B12 doesn't have a direct effect on bone density. It's more related to reducing something called homocysteine, which is an amino acid. So one thing that we do know in terms of how B12 behaves in the body and what it does is that it converts an amino acid called homocysteine into other amino acids. And what it does is it reduces the levels of homocysteine in the blood. And a lot of the research for lots of different conditions have been looking at that reduced homocysteine levels. And in fact, high homocysteine in the blood can cause issues. So the thought is that if B12 lowers it, then it potentially can have a benefit, I guess, in terms of some of these conditions. So some of the studies that have shown that high homocysteine levels have been found to correlate with people with cardiovascular disease, people who've had a stroke, people with like cognitive decline or Alzheimer's disease, and also osteoporosis. So what they've looked at is they've looked at people with these conditions and they've found that homocysteine levels are higher. And so they're saying, well, okay, maybe there's a link there in that these higher homocysteine levels are somehow contributing to these diseases. Current studies, though, however, have found inconclusive evidence about whether reducing homocysteine levels actually reduces the risk of those diseases. So we have a correlation, and this is really important when we're talking about research. Correlation just means that they look at people with certain diseases and they notice that there is something else that is going on that's common, like these high homocysteine levels. Now, that's a correlation. It's not causative, so it doesn't necessarily mean that that is causing the issue. They're just noticing that in people with these conditions that homocysteine levels are higher. But when they do studies to look at reducing the homocysteine levels, the evidence is inconclusive about whether it actually reduces the risk of these conditions. So a correlation, like I said, doesn't mean cause, and it also doesn't mean that if we then reduce that, we're then reducing those conditions that I spoke about. So it's a little bit inconclusive at the moment. So we know that vitamin B12 reduces homocysteine levels. So there is that interest in maybe if we either supplement with B12 or, you know, make sure people are having enough vitamin B12, that it might reduce their risk of the diseases that I mentioned. But like I said, at the moment, that research is very inconclusive. So if we have a look more closely at some of the studies that have done, I guess that have more research into them. One of them is bone density. So as I said, B12 can affect bone density by reducing homocysteine levels. But when we look at a literature review, so a literature review is where someone has gone and looked at all of the studies that have been done on vitamin, you know, B12 and bone health, and they come to a conclusion based on looking at all of them as a whole. So these studies have on vitamin, well, they actually looked at B vitamins, not specifically B12, and bone health, have showed that there are many studies that report an association between B12 and bone health. But when they look at intervention studies, so again, there's a correlation between, you know, B12 and bone health, but when they actually intervene and do an intervention study where they supplement with B12 and see if it improves bone health, there's been very mixed results. So some studies have shown a positive result, and lots of them have shown that homocysteine levels reduce. But no studies have actually been able to show a significant improvement in bone health. So this is where we have to be really careful with research and how we interpret research. So yes, there's plenty of research that's saying if you've got lower B12 levels, it is related to poor bone health. However, when they try to supplement with B12, they're not necessarily seeing significant improvements in bone health. So, you know, that's basically where the research stands in terms of that. And then the other thing that has been studied a little bit more widely, probably not as much as bone health, but is the impact of vitamin B12 on the brain. And again, a literature review that looked at 16 studies looked at supplementing with vitamin B12 to see whether it had any impact on cognitive function. So cognitive function is just how you think and, you know, your memory and how your brain sort of works in real life, how you remember to do things and how your brain processes information. And so these studies were done in older adults without any neurological disease. So these were healthier, older adults that didn't have any issues like, you know, Alzheimer's or dementia. And it basically concluded this review that there's no evidence that supplementation of B12 in people with or without a deficiency improved their cognition. And there's also some studies that it looked at the impact of B12 on depression, so our mood and depression. And again, no significant evidence that shows that if we supplement with people with B12 that there's a reduction in symptoms of depression. So at this stage, it doesn't look like there's a lot of evidence that's showing that it's going to improve our brain function. But I guess we need to wait and see, because there's not a huge amount of research yet on this, and no doubt there may be more in the future. And, you know, that the outcomes may be different as we get more and more research out there and understand it better. So that's really where we're at in terms of research. So not a lot of research is showing that supplementing with B12 is really showing any improvement in terms of some of those medical conditions and chronic conditions that I've mentioned. So really what we need to do is just make sure that we get enough B12 in our diet, provided we don't have any conditions that are affecting absorption of B12. But if you don't, we really, the best thing that we can do is to ensure that we're having foods that are high in B12 to meet our requirements. And that's really the best recommendation that I can make based on the evidence at this stage. So as I mentioned earlier, people who are vegetarian or vegan may have to be a little more cautious about choosing foods that have B12. If you're vegetarian and eat enough dairy, then that's not going to be an issue. If you don't, or if you're vegan and don't eat any animal products, you will need to have a look at those fortified foods. So if we're thinking about how this might look in terms of just what we're eating over the day, really, if you're eating meat, poultry, you know, seafood and dairy, it's pretty easy. You just need to include, you know, one or more of these at each meal, and you should quite easily be meeting your requirements. If you are vegan or vegetarian, what you may need to do is look at using yeast spreads like Vegemite and Marmite, again, checking that they actually have B12 in it, not just all the other B vitamins, and as regular Vegemite does. You know, you can obviously have that on toast, but also Vegemite and Marmite's really good for using as extra flavor. So if you're making soup or casseroles and things like that, putting some of that in will, it sort of acts like using beef stock or something like that. So it's got lots of flavor and you can add it to foods to enhance the flavor. Sprinkling nutritional yeast on your pasta or other meals that you're having could be another way to increase your B12. And including some of those fortified vegan meat alternatives into your meals, if that is something that you like and you enjoy them, that's another way to help increase B12 intake. And then, of course, if you're using a plant-based milk and you choose one that has B12 added, using that on your cereal, your oats, your smoothies, making creamy sauces for pasta and things like that is a great way to get some B12 in over the day. And then, of course, if you are vegetarian and eating dairy, having, you know, at least 3 serves of dairy a day will help you to meet those B12 requirements. Okay, so that's it. That's a bit about B12. I had noticed that, yeah, there seemed to be a lot of interest in B12 and menopause, and people sort of looking at whether it can help in menopause. But at this stage, in terms of supplementing, there is no evidence. So there's really no need to supplement unless, like I said, you have a particular condition, or maybe if you're vegan and not having enough in your diet. And on advice of your healthcare professional, they say that you need to take a supplement. But the rest of us who, you know, are getting enough in our diet, there's really no need to supplement. There's not enough evidence that, you know, taking a B12 supplement is going to have any positive effect on things like bone density or our brain health at this stage. Of course, if new research comes to light in the future and it looks like that advice changes, I will certainly let you know. I'll be keeping an eye out to see if anything new comes up over the coming years. But at this stage, yeah, there doesn't seem to be a need for supplementing unless you are deficient or at risk of deficiency. Okay, that's it for today's episode. It's a short and sweet one. I hope that that was helpful to you. If you want a written version of today's podcast, I have written a blog post over on my website. So if you head over to my website, I'll put the link down below in the show notes. You can read it, or if you want to refer to it at a later point rather than listening to the podcast again, although some of you might like to, there is a written version of what I've spoken about today over on my website, so you can refer to that at any stage in the future. So that's it for today. Before I finish up, can I just let you know that I have created a free ebook. So it's like an introduction to nutrition for menopause and perimenopause. So if you're looking for a bit of an overview of what sort of nutrients are important during this life stage, and some practical tips about how you can ensure that you're getting the nutrients that your body needs to keep yourself healthy now and into the future, head over to my website and you can sign up for my newsletter, which I promise I don't spam you and I don't send them very often, usually only about once a month at this stage. I send out a bit of a newsletter update. And of course, if you're on my newsletter, like if you're subscribed to my newsletter, if I have anything new coming up, I will always make sure that my subscribers know about it first. So if you're keen to know about anything new I have happening in the future, if you're on my newsletter list, then you will find out first. But yeah, if you're interested, please go sign up and you will get a copy of a free ebook that I put together. And hopefully that will be useful for you, particularly if you're sort of starting out, or you really just want to have an overview of the different nutrients that are important during this stage of life, and maybe slowly make some changes that you might see you might need to make to keep yourself healthy during this time. So that's really all I have to say, and I hope that you enjoyed this episode, and I'll be back in your ears in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you.